Welcome to Look Behind the Look, the celebrated podcast that explores your favorite looks in film, television, and fashion history. Through conversations with the fashion world's elite and award-winning hair, makeup, and costume designers on sets around the world, you will see and hear exciting tales from behind the scenes, career origin stories, and tons of advice and tips. I'm your host, Tiffany Bartok. Have you seen the latest film from Yorgos Lanthimos? I have. It is Poor Things. I saw it a while ago and now finally got the chance to tie Nadia Stacy down, who is responsible for the hair and makeup in the film. She's the hair and makeup designer that is probably best known to you because of her work in Cruella. She's a BAFTA winner and an Oscar nominee. She's incredible and somehow made Willem Dafoe's prosthetic makeup beautiful in a strange, amazing way. So this is what we're going to be talking about. And we're going to be talking about Emma's eyebrows and jet black hair and all things Poor Things. I know you love the movie. I know you ran to see it because the visuals are so gorgeous. And I want to hear what you think. So hit me up. I look forward to you listening to this conversation between Nadia and I, where she reveals some of her process and how she made this magic happen. Enjoy.
This is Bella.
Bella,
this is Mr. McCandles.
Hello, Bella.
Oh! She's an experiment.
Good evening.
Her brain and her body are not quite synchronized. But she is progressing at an accelerated pace.
Tell me, where did she come from?
I shall. For it is a happy tale.
Hi, Nadia. I'm here with Nadia Stacy, and we are here again. Last time we were here talking about Cruella, and this time we're talking about Poor Things, which, of course, I've seen and is just delightful. And I it's another Yorgos collab for you. So I just want to talk about when he first told you about this idea of Poor Things.
I think it was about 3 years ago now, something like that. I got an email from him and Emma, a joint email to say we're doing our next film and we'd love you to come and join us. And it's called Poor Things. And I had the book. So I just sent back a picture of me holding the book with a thumbs up.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. I love that. I haven't read the book. Is it as beautiful? How are the book and the movie different, if they are at all?
Yeah, they are. There's a lot more in the book, but the general kind of, you know, the basis of what you see in the film is the same. It's just kind of, yeah, much
more of each.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, I was curious about that because there's so many roads to go down. We can go down Willem Dafoe's road, you know, we could go make a whole movie out of that. And, you know, it was so beautiful. I wonder how you decided to approach let's start with Willem. Will, so you and Emma, of course, you worked on The Favourite together and you've worked with Yorgos for all of his films. Am I correct? Okay.
And then this one.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. But The Favourite's my favorite, of course. I mean, I'm not alone there, as we know. It's an extraordinary film and your work is incredible in it. The Badger Eye, everybody knows you from this, and you're an amazing Oscar, all the awards for Nadia. I can't imagine taking on this Willem Dafoe character because you had to have a story for every scar, I assume. So how did you begin to approach it?
I mean, everything always comes from the script, of course. And, you know, what we learn about Willem's character, Baxter, is through him talking about his father, and that his father before him was also a surgeon and an experimental and eccentric surgeon, and that he operated on him. And so we learn a few things from him, but then that's really left him up to interpretation as to what else might he have done to him. So there was that to start us off. There's also moments in the film when people talk about his face. Someone said he looks like a burnt dog. There's a woman in the street that's shocked by him. He says he can't go out very much because of what he looks like. So you know that it needs to be shocking. You know that it needs to be noticeable. But it was a big thing for me that, excuse me, there was a big thing for me that I felt like he needed to be, we needed to see him. There needed to be a man behind that. She loves him, and you know, there's a love story there, and this kind of fatherly figure to her, and actually he Baxter ends up being kind of one of the better guys in this
Yeah.
film, you know. And just if you've got someone like Willem Dafoe with that incredible face, why would you completely cover that, you know?
Yeah.
And it was the first time Yorgos had used prosthetics to that extent as well. So that was kind of, it was a big move for him to do that. To
Really?
have something, yeah, that would work with the character. So we had this Francis Bacon painting, and you see the man, but it's a distorted face. And that kind of became quite a marker of what the way we wanted to go with it, that there needed to be something off, there needed to be something wrong, but that it couldn't be too monstrous. I also think that really distracting when you've got something that strong makeup wise in a film. I feel like you keep looking at that. And actually with Bax, you
Right.
get used to his face and see him as the character. So then we just started to kind of plot out what might have happened to him. His ear's been taken off, the head's been opened up at some point. Where each scar has come from, and each scar needed to be very straight and kind of almost perfect because his father is a good surgeon. So it,
Yeah.
you know, done really well. So that's kind of how it came about. But we went through lots and lots of different artwork and lots of different ideas to get to where we got to. And I actually went to Shona Heath, our production designer's studio, and we got gathered all the artwork together, and then we kind of cut it up almost like Baxter's face would be, and put an eye and an ear there. And what if we had a scar here? And we had it together almost like a kind of photo fit picture. And yeah, and Baxter was born.
And how much did Willem partake in this collaboration with you guys for Baxter?
I had an initial Zoom with him right in the beginning, and we kind of talked about all these things. We talked about who he was, who what his father might have done to him. We talked at one point whether there was sort of any scope to do something with kind of animal kind of elements, because we have these
Oh.
hybrid animals running around.
Right.
So we went through lots and lots of different sort of variables, and he was very involved, but then he really kind of let us run with the process, because I think Baxter could be so many different things. There's no kind of to it. It just is what it who he is. So yeah, he was very involved, but then also kind of very happy to let us do our thing. And Mark Coulier, who's the another prosthetic designer who I work with a lot, and Josh and Robin, who applied the prosthetics, were just all, you know, all very kind of involved right from the beginning, really.
So you were overseeing makeup, hair, and prosthetics in this. No
Yeah.
easy deal.
No.
I was talking with my friend about the differences between English and American designers. Why is it more, is it about the union that there's a makeup and hair designer and then here it might be separate? What is that? It seems to be that the European films are all makeup and hair designers. So how does that work? How does that work just for people who are getting into the business end of things?
Yeah, I think it's a union situation. That's
Right,
why it is.
union, right?
But yeah, but here it always has been that it, you train in hair and makeup and prosthetics, and you oversee all of it. If you get a film with huge prosthetics, it tends to be a separate department. And I
Got
would
it.
always like Mark, because that's their speciality. That's, you know. But for us, yeah, we always I always design the hair and the makeup across the board. And for me, it would be really difficult
Yeah.
to choose because I feel like it's, we're creating a character. And so that is a whole person to me. So it would be really difficult for me to pass on to send them to hair or to send them to makeup, whichever way around it would be. I kind of want to see the whole thing come together
Sure.
so yeah.
The two are always very cohesive, especially in your work with Cruella and we were talking about Emma's storytelling through her hair and the length of it and what were the challenges of that and how did you sort of decide you were going to tell the story of her hair length and all the
Yeah,
hair?
Bella, we again learn through Max when he's taking notes on Bella that her hair grows at an accelerated rate.
Right.
So it kind of, it grows with Bella over the course of the film. We see her as a baby and then we see her as a woman, and this hair kind of goes on that journey with her and grows as she grows. And I feel like it's such a marker of who she is as well. It really kind of tells its own story. When we first meet her, her hair is tied into a plait because Miss Prim would do that for her. She's in controlled circumstances, she's an experiment. And so she would be being looked after, and she's a baby essentially. When she goes out into Lisbon, into the world, and Duncan takes her away, this story kind of adventure begins for her. And I just think that moment when she walks out of the hotel in Lisbon against all the colors and this vibrant world we see around her, and then you see this just really long jet black hair, is just such a marker that Bella is very different in the world around her. She's kind of otherworldly, no one else looks like her. And it was really clear that we needed to do that. And it really showed that she doesn't shackle herself to society. She doesn't know that it would be the proper thing to do to have your hair up and done properly like a lady. She wouldn't know that. No one's ever taught her that. So it really kind of tells its own story. And then I wanted to map out the length of the hair as she goes along, and kind of so it changes length when she gets to Lisbon, changes when she goes to the ship, changes when she goes to Paris, when we get to this our longest length in Paris. And I did that with backfalls, which were attached to kind of micro braids under
Oh, wow.
hair, because I'm not allowed to use wigs as ever with Yorgos.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh,
Yeah.
my God.
I just got an email saying no wigs. That's all it said.
Oh.
I had to do it in a way that was we
And that's
were.
not budgetary. That's not budgetary. That's just his fear of it looking fake or.
Yeah, he doesn't like fake, so he doesn't actually like hair, makeup,
Right,
prosthetic. He doesn't
right.
like it's putting a layer onto someone and changing things. So he likes to see imperfections. He doesn't want you to cover anything up. And it's right. And it's definitely right for Bella. As we said, she's a baby. And if for one second, as good as we might be, if you see wig lace or you see something that looks fake, it's going to pull you away from, you're going to forget, you're not going to believe in Bella. And so it's right that she should look like that. And I'd kind of achieved it with different backfall lengths and changed them with every kind of place you went, really.
Wow. And so the eyebrows were, those aren't real. Are they real? Her eyebrows? Oh my God. Emma, how do you have that
Really,
many
didn't touch them, just left them to be.
Oh,
And
she must have gone insane. You must have loved this.
that was amazing. I mean, yeah.
Wow.
And then obviously, because I dyed them as dark as I dyed her hair, against her skin, her complexion, they just look really, really strong. They're not actually, because they've been a real kind of topic of conversation, and that in
Sure.
real, they're not kind of that crazy, but it's just that the color against her skin tone, I think, is just kind of really, noticeable.
Yeah. Now tell me, what was your favorite segment of the film? So, I mean, it must be impossible to pick a favorite, but, and I know Paris was, you know, more of the brothel. So that must've been very exciting, but what was your favorite section to work on?
It all felt like small little movies within sure. a movie. We went every time she went on an adventure, because we sort of shot chronologically, really, because we did Baxter's house and then we all moved to the Lisbon set. And the sets were so incredible that you could actually walk around them. So you could go into the Portuguese tart shop, you could go into the
hotel. Oh my gosh.
You could walk past the river, you could, you know, all within a set. So it was almost like going on these little kind of trips with her, and each place brought something new for us. So the kind of look would be different in Lisbon, and then the look would be different to the ship. And
right.
I enjoyed Paris and the brothel because I had real scope to kind of play with the look of the girls in the brothel, and they have some really interesting makeups, and some of those have kind of really small prosthetics. And so that, you know, there was lots of things, and Madame Swiney was a favorite character to do. So, and Bella experiments with makeup for the first time in Paris. So yeah, Paris, I think, was kind of great place.
And tell me about Madame Swiney. Let's talk about her tattoos and all of that, because another thing my friend and I were talking about was that her tattoos, she knows she's going to be showing so much skin. So does she want these people to see the story on her skin, I was wondering? Or what's the story with the tattoos, and how were they chosen?
Well, Catherine Hunter, who plays Swiney, is just such amazing. She's incredible. And her physicality and is just so interesting. Mm. And Charlie Waddington, our costume designer, and myself chatted about what her look would be. And I knew that she was going to wear these turbans and we wouldn't see any hair at all. And then the clothes were very kind of high collared and really covering this body. So they're huge kind of costumes over this body. And we talked about whether we would ever see anything else. Like, what's going on under that turban? What kind of, with this makeup, wow. What's going on underneath all of this? And there's a scene where she delivers the hot chocolate to Bella, and it's at nighttime and it's in her bedroom. So it's a kind of private moment. And that was the opportunity for us to see what's under the clothes.
Yeah.
And I had this picture of, I think, an Edwardian lady that I'd had, oh my gosh, probably, I reckon I've had it about 15, 20 years. I collected it from somewhere and I absolutely loved it. And this girl is covered with tattoos from the neck down to her wrist, to her ankles. And I just remember thinking, who is this that would have those tattoos in a time? Really strange thing to do. And so I mentioned it to Jorgos and thought it was quite a curveball choice, but he said, yeah, let's do it. And let me do it. So then the plan started of what would these tattoos be? And it's kind of, you know, like tattoos are, they're a kind of map and a storytelling of people's lives and moments and, you know, kind of, you know, wanting to mark an occasion on yourself. And so everything needed to be designed for Swiney. So there's French sailors tattoos. There's I Love Pierre on her arm. There's kind of nautical signs for all the sailors that have passed through there, through the brothel. Just kind of a story of her life. There's a big octopus across her back because of the way she moves. And there was lots of physicality as well. So there's like snakes and she's got sort of fish. She's got monkeys on her chest. Everything was, why would Swiney have this? It needed to. So even if it's just for a moment, it just tells a story.
Wow. I can't imagine the life she lived. I mean, I can imagine it.
Yeah. 100 lives, you know, and she's so, yeah, it was fun to sort of think what they might have been.
How did that brothel not, how did the tone of this movie, this isn't so much about makeup, but it is also because you, of course, played a part in the tone by far. But how did this film come across so light and not and joyful? What is the secret to it coming across that way rather than like, you know, poor things, you know, sad and depressing?
Because I think Bella is a joy, and we as an audience are discovering the world through Bella, and we're discovering, and particularly as a woman, you're watching it, you're discovering a world that where you would have no shame, no rules, no, you know, society's not telling you to do anything. You're starting from scratch and you can be however you want to be. It's like a child being brought out into these worlds and discovering everything from champagne and Portuguese tarts to sex to everything. And it's like, you know, she's learning about life, and it's that is joyous, and we get to see it through this kind of uninhibited being, and it's kind of amazing. I mean, I totally fell in love with Bella. I don't think I've ever been so attached to a character that I've done. And when we, on the final night, I took the hair pieces out and then cut Emma's own hair, and as her hair fell to the floor, we cried, because it was really like, we'll never have that again, because we don't live in that world. It was I think that's where the joy is in it. Yeah.
Wow. And that's what Duncan was so drawn to.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's just like he would never have seen anything like this her before, you know, and the joy of, you know, everything he teaches her. It's kind of, you know, I suppose it is like having a child around you, and with a child seeing things for the first time, it kind of reminds you of, you know, oh yeah, it's great. Well, I don't know.
Right.
First time, you know, it's beautiful. So yeah, it's intoxicating, I think, for him.
Absolutely.
And also the ruin of him.
Oh my God. I mean, when he yells Bella, I never laugh so hard. And don't we just wish we could all be like that to a man who is just, you're annoying. Like what?
Love it when they're in the hotel and she comes downstairs and she's like, you're very strange, and like just pats him on the back. And I thought, I'm in the reverse of that, when it's like, why are you bugging me about like dating someone else? You know,
I know. Can't this just be a thing that I do? Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then let's talk about now. Oh my God, please. I haven't had enough coffee, but where does she see the despair in the world? Where are we? We're not in Paris. We're not in Lisbon.
Now you go. Oh, I've totally got it.
I'll fix this. Don't worry. The most saturated in color, and she sees all the people dying and she cries.
Andrea.
Where's that?
Andrea.
Yes. So when we see that color saturation, what did the different settings do to your work? Like, did you knew about them and you tested them first?
Well, no, the biggest one was we didn't know that the first part of the film was going to be in black and white.
Great.
No idea. So that was a surprise.
No wigs. And I'm not telling you how this is being projected.
We didn't know. I mean, luckily for me, that first part of the film in black and white, she has no makeup on her face whatsoever.
Okay.
She
has, really? Wow.
And she has black hair. So actually, in terms of me adapting for makeup for black and white, was much easier. The guys, however, had to adapt Baxter's prosthetic that we painted differently for black and white. So that needed to be adapted.
Okay.
Just because painted differently, particularly red or read really dark. So if there's any kind of red skin tone, it will come up much darker.
Right, of course.
Yeah. So yeah, mine wasn't so difficult. And actually the fact that her hair is jet black kind of works with every set. It's jarring in every set, but it's meant to be. So it kind of, I didn't ever have to kind of worry whether it was going to work on with certain colors, because if it doesn't, it shouldn't, you know?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So she, you dye, what is her hair color normally? Red?
She's no, everyone thinks she is.
I
No,
know,
she's
right?
kind of
I think of her as red.
blonde. She's kind of,
Yeah,
yeah, like
like
a,
yours. Yeah.
yeah, she's not, yeah.
Okay, so you never had to lift the black.
No.
Okay, thank God.
Just yeah, she had it done when we first spoke about it. I was already in Budapest and she was in America, and Tracy Cunningham is her
Oh,
hair
right.
colorist. I'm gonna go and see Tracy and get my hair done. And then she FaceTimed me maybe and said, yeah, it's gone quite dark. And I was like, okay, what's quite dark? Because I said, let's go dark, but keep going up so that we've got scope. And yeah, it was pretty much, I was like, this is pretty much black by the time we got it. And then actually it was happening because I can't imagine a world where Bella doesn't have black hair. It does. I think dark brown would have felt like we never quite pushed.
Yes.
She needs to be, it needs to be slightly odd.
Yes. And it's just so beautiful against the fair skin and the poster art and all of the images. It was amazing. And let's talk a little bit I mean, I don't, at first glance, I feel like there's not a lot to talk about. So tell me that I'm wrong. Mark Ruffalo has fabulous hair. And there's a lot of it. And what did you really want to express with him?
There's actually
Okay.
quite a with Duncan actually, because when he first arrives, he's this kind of very sure of himself, like Lothario, who, you
Right.
know, very confident. He obviously knows the finer things in life because as soon as he takes Bella to Lisbon, he's ordering champagne, Portuguese tarts. He knows where to go, where to take her. You know, there's the joke, he's got a scent of 1,000 women on him, and they like, so he's, you know, he's been very sure of himself. And so I felt like he was a very considered character.
Right.
And so his hair needed to be perfectly kind of coiffed and waved, and his mustache would be very trimmed and perfect. And then obviously he starts to unravel as he kind of falls in love with Bella, and can't control her. He starts to lose control. And so that's kind of marked out in his journey in terms of his hair and his look, that it just starts to unravel. Suddenly, that beautiful, perfect wave is suddenly kind of coming loose and coming, getting,
Yes.
that just continues. And by the time, you know, on the ship, he's drinking a lot and gambling and kind of, you know, so his focus isn't his look. And then when we get to Paris, he's unshaven, he's given up. I mean, he's just sat on that bench with his head down, and he doesn't even realize she's got money in her coat, and he's just totally. And by the time he's shouting at a window, you know, he's just a mess. And then we go to the asylum where he's really, you know, lost it. And we did things to him. He got bruises on him and scratches on him, and he's just kind of lost it. And then it comes, you know, a different journey when we see him at the wedding, and he's hiding behind Alfie, and there's like this sort of pathetic little child quality of him.
Yes.
It was him, he did it. And so his hair is really kind of taken over in this party, and with lots of grease in his hair. So,
I
you know,
did
like,
notice that.
so
Yes.
yeah. So real journey again in kind of hair and makeup of the decline of this character.
Yes. It's a very different role for him too. You know, it was enjoyable to see him like that, and I'm sure they had a lot of fun. What was the most fun that you guys all had on set?
We had a lot of fun on Friday. Well, in the makeup trailer, we had margaritas, which was him making margaritas on a Friday night.
That's
Margaritas.
cute. That's cute.
Yes, we had a lot of fun. We went out a lot. We had lots of, yeah, we had a
Where were
mariachi
you filming? Where were you filming?
in Budapest.
Budapest.
We had a mariachi band for Emma's birthday one night come. It was, yeah, we had lots and lots of fun. And those guys are just really fun to be around. Mark's great, Willem's great, Willem's got lots of stories to tell you.
I
Emma's
bet.
just great. So yeah, it was good. It was good. And
Good.
Rob, it was a really, really good cast. Yeah.
Good. And then for the brothel, did you have to have a, you obviously had to have a story for each person that was in the brothel, yeah?
Yeah.
And was there one that you were really, a story that you really were excited by?
I mean, I just really enjoyed doing the makeups and the hair on the girls in the brothel, and it was
Sure.
again a chance to kind of do something that would be slightly different to society again. So we kind of looked at Victorian shapes, but then kind of really kind of messed those up. And actually, some of the makeups are a little bit more sort of 20s, smudgy, smoky eyes, and the makeups that we used in there, the makeup colors were. There was a real kind of thread going through the film in terms of colors from the beginning that Shona and James had used a lot of medical references back in Baxter's house in the beginning. So
Right.
kind of reds and pinks and purples of veins or blood or those kind of colors that were used. And I'd thought about the fact that women used sex workers back in the day, the origin of red lipstick was kind of to promote sex, basically. And
Right.
I wanted to use those colors really strongly in within the women in there. And so that's why Swiney has a really kind of impactful makeup as soon as you see her. And
Yes.
Bella uses makeup for the first time because she's working there. It's not just for society again, it's because she's using it as a tool. So yeah, it was just fun to do, and that some of the women had some really fun makeups and hair and prosthetic nipple covers. It was fun. Yeah, it was
I mean, you
good.
can tell when she, the way she does her makeup, it's very logical even then. It's just like, they do this, they do this, this works, the, you know what I mean? It's very logical and it makes sense.
I feel like I'm just going to have a sort of career out of. I remember after The Favourite and people asking me about the badger makeup, and I was like, oh, it took maybe like 5 minutes.
I
Just
remember you saying.
like, I've done this again on this. So like, there was times when again on this, it was like Bella would just borrow lipstick off someone or an eyeshadow off someone, or you know, she would put it on. And again, it's not long ago that she was a child. It's, you know, so it's done in a kind of naive, playing with things, but it's, you know, yeah.
Well, you really, I mean, you make it sound like I didn't, you know, it was effortless, but you are so invested with each of your characters and you've taken so long with them to really, you know, come up with where they're coming from and where they're going. And so it might seem effortless, but not, no other person would think of these things. So, you
No, I
know.
Yeah, I've always thought of myself as rather than a makeup artist, like as a storyteller and as part of it. So it's about the character and why, and you know, nothing goes on
Yeah.
unless why would they have done that, or where did they get that makeup from, or
Exactly. Yes. That's why you are the best at what you do. Are you so are you on a film right now? Can you tell us what it is? Is it I know you're doing Snow White. We know you're doing Snow White. But that's done, right?
No, we've got 5 more days to do, but we were in the middle of the 5 days when the strikes happened. So we had to just stop.
Oh
And now past availability means that we're still waiting to do the 5 days. So I don't know when it'll be. So the film release date has been pushed. Yeah, I don't know when we'll ever finish it, but yeah, that's still to be finished.
Oh,
And then
Lord.
I've just done a film called Stuntman, which is by the company Marv, who make things like Kingsman and Kick-Ass,
Okay.
you know, Rocket Man and those kinds of things. And it's a really, really fun take of the industry, and Sam Rockwell, Chris Hemsworth, Matt Damon all play kind of parodies of themselves around this world of stuntmen. We have had the most fun.
That sounds like a blast.
It has been so much fun. Yeah, it's like a film inside a film. So we've been really had lots of scope to do kind of silly characters. And yeah, it was really, really fun.
I love that.
And I'm coming to New York to do a film. So I'm going to be in New York for most part of next year.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you'll have to ask me where I will come and meet you and show you a good time for sure on any days off that you have. And we're getting a Cruella too, aren't we? I mean,
that's
one day. That's the goal.
Yeah. I think it's all going to happen. It's just kind of when and, you know, fitting it around. And, but yeah, I think that's the plan. Yeah.
Good. Oh, well, Nadia, it was so wonderful talking to you as always. And I will be talking to you about your next, probably, well, we'll see what it is, but I'll have you, we'll see one of these many projects that you're working on. I will be talking to you about them next.
Anytime. It was great to speak to you.
Look Behind the Look is a Vinyl Foot production, written by me, your host, Tiffany Bartok, produced by Jace Bartok, edited by Evan Rivard. If you're interested in learning more, find our video version on the YouTube channel, Look Behind the Look Podcast. There you can see rare photos and clips from our guests. And please follow us on Twitter at Look Behind Pod and Instagram at Look Behind the Look. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe. And tell your friends and spread the word. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or any podcatcher of your choice. Thanks for listening to Look Behind the Look.